What up, y'all? I'm Logan Marie Glitterbaum, and this is the Green Market Agoras podcast, where reduce, reuse, recycle meets agra anarchy action. As you may know, we are now part of the C4SS podcast network, alongside Mutual Exchange Radio, the Enrages, and a host of other podcasts. It is awesome. Go check that out. Today, I am joined by my brother, Jeffrey Novator. How are you, Jeffrey?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I mean, you know, pretty...
Yeah.
Pretty fucking... Okay, I guess.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this quasi-apocalyptic nightmare.
Right. It's, how's your pandemic been so far?
Well, so far, I have been collecting unemployment checks each week. It's been pretty exciting.
Oh, that's pretty fun. So you're not working then?
Well, partially I'm working.
See, that's the myth that people don't realize, is not everyone on unemployment isn't working.
Yes, I had an ex that didn't understand how unemployment worked, and I explained to her that when the schools are out, because my schedule conforms to public schooling and sometimes private schooling, but when I'm out on holiday or something, I collect unemployment. So
yeah, and you work for a private company, but you work for a bus company, so they, right? So it's like they,
yeah,
still conform around schools, yeah. And that's why you said public and private schools, right?
Yes, because I also transport for Catholic school.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, how the Catholic people,
they're pretty smart, actually.
Yeah. People seem surprised, but I mean, those kids, between the education that they get there and all the little bits of ways they educate each other in their rebellion, definitely shows. But so give a little background for those who don't know you. I mean, obviously you're my brother, but people around online know you in anarchist circles. I know you've ran a few egoist Facebook groups and things like that.
I don't really have a background in organizing or anything like that, but I have met with leftists and whatnot in the area.
Yeah, you're a terminally online anarchist, right?
Yeah, one of those. I mean, I would like to do more, but I found people and whatnot in the area, and a lot of them, like, after Redneck Revolt collapsed, they just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely still IWW, DSA, like all those in most areas, but it was really sad to see Redneck Revolt just kind of, basically collapse in the way that it did, and,
Yeah, all his friends are one of the, I don't know if to really call him a leader of the DSA faction here, but, you know, he was one of the main organizers. And he just kind of disappeared, and I haven't heard from him.
Yeah, I mean, they do that. A lot of that, I mean, you join online, start paying dues, and then they'll connect you with who's local. DSA is good at that. IWW is good at that.
I mean, years ago, I was trying to formulate a group called the Black Flag Solidarity Network, hoping that it would be kind of a mutual aid network, but that kind of failed.
Yeah.
It may have been my approach, though. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, especially if you're coming at it and trying to create a new group in the area, it really depends. It's about figuring out what's there first, linking up with that shit, and then expanding. But sometimes there ain't stuff in the area. Sometimes you do have to create stuff, and that's harder. That's a lot harder.
But you find that a lot of people are actually content with the alienation and social stratification that comes with the contemporary system.
Yeah. Well,
and
I mean,
that's,
it's
a problem when you're trying to get people to organize or formulate a mutual aid network.
A lot of people sort of don't think that, I mean, there's a lot of people that get in that doomer mentality where they don't think that things can change on any substantial level. And sure, like, you can argue that some things will not change fast enough, and that is discouraging. Oh. We've already triggered a mass extinction, and there's not much reversing that. Other than that, it really comes down to that basic AEIOU methodology of, like, the IWW and other groups, where it's agitate, educate, inoculate, organize, unionize. And really starts with those first few, which is agitate and educate. And agitation is figuring out what is upsetting the people around you, not trying to get them to be upset about the same things you are. So it's kind of starting out where people are already at and then educating them on the ways that they can correct that situation through collective action. Or individual action, depending on the circumstance.
I mean, I only found some anarcho-leftist on Tinder, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's definitely a horny crowd, but it's definitely a horny crowd. Not, yeah, nice. It's interesting seeing anarchism become more mainstream and other forms of leftism and stuff become more mainstream and see more people self-identify as that. Because you see a lot more people online engaging in those conversations, and you see that being more dominant strains of online politics, but it honestly doesn't translate as much to real-world organizing as you'd expect. A lot of those people stay online. Now, there are mass protest movements and stuff like that, which tend to draw a lot of people out. But there's a difference between going out and joining a protest that's already there and doing actual community organizing, too. Not that both can't be effective, but one takes a lot more sustained effort.
Yeah, where I live, though, in Suffolk County, there is an anarchist history behind it, because Josiah Warren, most of you know who, you know, that is.
Yeah, Josiah Warren.
Yeah, during the Civil War, he built a commune known as Modern Times, which actually strived for a while without a centralized police mechanism.
Yeah, it definitely is wild how much anarchist history and how much leftist history there is around a lot of areas. I mean, growing up in Louisiana, I always thought it rather backwards in a lot of ways, and sure, but at the same time, it spawned a lot of amazing people and organizations. I mean, Huey Newton grew up in Louisiana, fucking Common Ground Collective was founded after Katrina. Like, there's a lot of really cool stuff that comes out of there, too. And traveling out back there and seeing the Louis LaVie encampment that was started to protest the Bayou Bridge pipeline, that was amazing. I think it's always amazing to see what is the radical history and present of the place that you live in.
Yeah.
I think that knowing that you can draw upon that and actually, it's a good way to make some inroads sometimes, just tapping into the local culture.
So, talking to locals and whatnot about the COVID-19 pandemic actually called my anarchism into question, you know? I don't know if that's common or...
I think a lot of people question their politics during the pandemic. I think a lot of people question capitalism, a lot of people question the government, and on the other hand, a lot of anarchists had their anti-government politics tested to some degree, as we see a lot of people not live up to the kind of self, you know, the kind of individual responsibility ethic that is preached.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, like, I have relatives, family that complain about the whole COVID-19 pandemic, and they would get almost terminally upset when they're about to enter a store, and they would complain and say that they're not going to wear a face diaper, and you know you don't see any strain of respect or responsibility for, you know, a sustainable system. Nothing that we would like to see.
No, and it's wild how they're creating an issue out of nothing. For one, vaccine mandates, you know, the other big thing aside from masks, are not new in America. That's something that's been happening since George Washington mandated that his army be vaccinated. And for as long as I've been alive, government employees, military, all that, I had to get vaccinated to go to public schools. Like, this is not new. At the same time, you do see leftists who, because of anti-vax rhetoric, kind of jump to defending vaccines a little too much. To the point where you don't see them, you don't see leftists speaking up and challenging some of the no liability clauses as much as you'd expect. You don't see them actually like looking into funding and questioning, you know, motives of different companies as these vaccines are coming out, things like that. But at the same time, it's just, I don't know, there's no nuance. Everybody's on one end or the other, and it's like every other thing. Don't trust the pharmaceutical industry, but trust the science.
I think a lot of people have a difficult time ascertaining the difference between the industry and of itself, kind of like Monsanto and GMO. Like, we can say that, okay, Monsanto's practices are harmful, but that doesn't ultimately mean GMO technology isn't useful.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of these vaccine companies do have questionable practices and stuff, and it is good to look into, when they're releasing vaccines now, who are they being studied by, who's funding those studies and whatnot, because, I mean, it's not unheard of for people to fudge facts in various studies in order to pass things through or to get the results that they wanted on an experiment, so that way they can pass off and say the science backed up what they wanted. And I mean, we see it in everything from giant pharmaceutical companies to fucking scammers like Andrew Wakefield, who fucking was caught fucking fudging, completely making up facts in his fucking MMR autism study. And, you know, he completely made up facts and data for that. So, I mean, it's not unheard of for so-called scientists to fucking do some shit for personal gain. And it is good to look into that. But also, we're seeing firsthand the rate of hospitalization and death in fully vaccinated people versus partially vaccinated people versus unvaccinated people. And there's a clear correlation that shows that, for the most part, these vaccines fucking work.
It kind of hurts, though, to see the amount of nurses who decided to walk out due to their skepticism of the vaccinations, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think skepticism, you know, is always warranted to the pharmaceutical industry and of the government, but like I said, you know, trust the fucking science at least, and if you can't trust science, then you shouldn't be a nurse.
But a lot of nurses you find do not trust.
That's what I'm saying. That's, they shouldn't be nurses. I'm kind of glad this forced them to walk out in some ways, but yeah, it does. It does call into question, like, how would we weed those folks out from that profession without government licensing and law, you know, and these laws and shit.
I was having a face-to-face discussion about this the other day, and the person essentially went to scapegoating immigrants and saying, oh, are they really concerned about vaccination when you have immigrants that are bringing polio, that are bringing measles, that are, you know, bringing all this disease that come from, in her words, she said, disease-stricken hellhole or something like that.
I think they're under the impression that immigration reform means we want more illegal immigration, when in fact immigration reform means we want to make most immigration much easier so people don't have to resort to illegal immigration. And that legal immigration, any form of legal immigration, even Ellis Island-like style borders, which is basically open border policy by most people's standards, as open border of a policy as we would have under U.S. government, even that required vaccine checks.
Yeah.
Like, so what? We're asking people, we're trying to make it easier for people to immigrate legally, which actually means that we would be making sure that they're properly vaccinated before coming in.
But if a person decides to scapegoat immigration, you know, immigrants, in the time of, where vaccines are the utmost necessity, they're kind of defeating the purpose of their argument, because they're essentially making an argument for vaccination. Like, we should be vaccinated if all these people from so-called disease-stricken countries are coming over.
Yeah. No, but
that makes all the most sense to get vaccinated, you know?
Well, I mean, half their anti-mask rhetoric doesn't make any damn sense anyways. What's the purpose of mask laws? To exercise control? Like, that's the most thing that they had, was just to exercise control and to program us or some bullshit. But it's like, okay, I mean, but wouldn't a better exercise of control be not fucking with their facial recognition software? We're talking about how they're trying to create a surveillance state, a fucking police state, and then we're seeing articles about how masks are sometimes tampering with their facial recognition software. Now, some works well enough to work around most masks, but not all of it. Why are they making it harder on themselves to exercise control over us? That doesn't make any damn sense. Think of how many anti-mask laws have been there during protests so they can, you know, keep protesters from masking up and concealing their identities. Now, every protest that I've seen since, everyone's, aside from the anti-mask protests themselves, everyone's in masks and is supposed to be.
I know, the anti-maskers are kind of defeating the purpose. Like, the whole purpose is rebelling it and whatnot. But Antifa and insurrectionists in general, they were wearing masks, you know, forever.
Yeah, it's really fucking stupid. Like, wear your masks. Not only does it protect you from disease, but it helps conceal your identity. It's still cool that we have a legal excuse to be able to conceal our identity. And it's still weird that so-called anti-authoritarians just...
Come on. In NYC, people would have probably shot you if they saw you wearing a mask. You know? But now you can just walk into a bank with a mask and be like, hey.
Yep. It's wild, and, like, I hope that actually continues to be a thing, because even as they're easing mask laws in some areas, like, people aren't being stopped from wearing them, and also I'm hoping in the future, especially during flu seasons, that it just becomes regular practice for some people to wear, people to wear them when they feel sick or if they might be at risk or things like that. Like, why the fuck not?
I mean, I find myself being way more relaxed with the mask than I was at the beginning of this pandemic.
Yeah, was it an adjustment? Sure, but, like, I'm happy with it. And honestly, at this point, I just wear bandanas at this point. Yeah. Like, it's easy. I can pull it up and down real quick, and, like, I'm not gonna lose it. And, you know, no matter what I'm doing, I've got it.
If I end up getting sick, though, I'm just taking off work, and I'm quarantining myself, you know, away from the neighbors. Hell, I've already had neighbors die from this thing.
Yeah.
And I still know people personally that deny it.
Yeah.
Even people that seeing these people get rushed to the ICU, they're still denying it, even after witnessing someone get rushed off in an ambulance.
Yeah.
I can't avoid hovering over children. And some of my children have autism. They can't wear a mask. A lot of them have sensory input issues. I had kids that smacked people around, that banged their heads against windows. You can't expect a kid like that to wear a mask.
No, but you can wear a mask during that, so you're at least protecting them. They're not able to fucking wear a mask. I mean, that's the thing, is your mask protects them, their mask protects you, is how it's supposed to work. But, like, if they can't wear a mask, then you're the one mainly at risk, you know? And as long as they're vaccinated, which, you know, for public schools, they have to be, unless they have health reasons or religious reasons, like, it... So how else has your anarchism been tested in recent times? Because due to that,
to explain, it's like the whole pandemic made us question whether we needed a state, an essential organization, to essentially mandate the vaccinations. To I know, I sound a bit authoritarian here, but
yeah, I mean, it does call into question when people aren't taking public safety in mind and putting others in danger and really aren't living up to the ethos of personal responsibility, which libertarians and anarchists kind of rely on as the basis of their philosophy to some degree. Like, it does make you wonder, how do we compensate for assholes like this? Or just misinformed people?
Like, it makes me feel like just converting to a tanky, you know? Just be like, you know what? Let's just put people that are refusing to wear masks in concentration camps. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, but how much of that anti-masker rhetoric, how much of that anti-vaxxer rhetoric is caused by inherent distrust of the state and of capitalist institutions? Even by people who do not claim to be anti-statist or anti-capitalist, it still comes from inherent distrust of those institutions, does it not?
I've noticed that. I've actually brought this up with capitalists who, you know, they seem vehemently anti-capitalist when they discuss big pharma, big tech. It's like, well, how come you're okay with people profiting off of having a roof over your head? Are you okay with pet fees and all this other stuff that landlords like to put forth? Why are they okay with that, but they're not okay with medical companies making money off of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's wild. But yeah, I mean, the fact that people's sentiments seem to lean anti-capitalist and anti-statist when talking about this subject, or at least seems to be rooted in skepticisms of such institutions, would not abolishing those institutions relieve a lot of that skepticism and therefore alleviate a lot of the issues?
Well, their philosophy lapses into a paradox, you know?
Absolutely. But what I'm saying is, would that shit really be as prevalent or be able to spread to as many people as it is without those institutions existing?
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, like, it's, on the one hand, we can talk about how we need those institutions such as the state to mandate vaccines, but on the other hand, we could talk about how skepticism of the state is what causes people not to want to get vaccines.
That's true.
And how vaccine mandates will just actually make people double down on that even harder.
Yeah, just seeing ardent capitalist against profit suddenly, it's like, wow.
Oh yeah, no, it's hilarious. And I mean, a lot of them use the libertarian line of, oh, they're not free market capitalist businesses, they're in bed with the state in various ways. And it's like,
yeah.
Okay, I guess we're bringing back old-school anarcho-capitalist analysis, which is much more in line with anarchist analysis more broadly.
That analysis essentially dies when it comes to, a little off-topic, but when it comes to Tesla Motors, that analysis essentially dies.
In what way?
Because they aren't critical of how Elon Musk accrued all this money.
True, and I mean, he used a lot of subsidies and government grants and other shit to fucking pull off his stuff.
I don't know, you might need to fact check this, but he benefited from apartheid.
Oh yeah, no, his family is, he comes from a South African family, so yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, it's fucking wild. But I mean, you even see some people that lean somewhat left sometimes, like, riding Elon's dick, and it's weird. I mean, less so on the left, but you do get some who are like, Oh, he's saving the environment. Ooh, woo.
Well, the more liberal people that kind of consider themselves left.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
I know a few of those, too.
If they want to self-identify as leftists, I'm not going to be gatekeepers and tell them no. But, yeah, traditionally, leftism means anti-capitalist.
I mean, don't even go as far as saying it's anti-market, but I don't believe the left is inherently anti-market.
No, I mean, we've definitely seen we've seen forms of Marxism which have markets.
Like Titoism?
Yeah, I mean, hell, Marx wasn't anti-market himself. Yeah. So it's weird to say that the left is anti-market, and that really doesn't make any sense.
Honestly, I used to be very fond of the whole Bookchinite mentality, but, you know, Bookchin, I think, popularized a lot of these anti-market critiques on the left.
Yeah, which is odd, because he also had some praise for market libertarians, too. And yeah, to some degree, I think some of the, especially a lot of modern mutualist theory works really well with, in my opinion, can work as a decent complement to, like, Bookchin's ideas of libertarian municipalism and kind of building up local community governance, and also working with markets. So basically working with the structures that are there and creating dual power within those structures.
Yeah, I'm not really that fond of, like, the strictest Bookchinist.
I mean, I think you and I are very similar in that we don't really wholeheartedly fucking dogmatically subscribe to any one strain of anarchism. We kind of mix and match to some degree.
Yeah. Even with Marxism, I can even mix Marxism.
Oh yeah, I mean, Kevin Carson fucking is heavily inspired by Marxism in his work, and basically if you read a lot of his mutualist work, it's justifying it on the basis that it basically achieves what Marx actually wanted.
I mean, I have Marxist literature on my shelf.
I mean, Marx was a huge influence on a lot of the left, including groups like Black Panthers, which have pretty much become the blueprint for a lot of groups organizing in various areas.
Even though their official platform was Maoism, I think we could still pull a lot from them.
I mean, they were Marxist-Leninist Maoist, and I mean, but they functioned rather libertarian in many respects. Now, centralization of their leadership was part of their downfall, admittedly, from my understanding. Anyways, we've certainly rambled off topic quite a bit from COVID, so I guess this is as good a place to end it as any. Is there anything else you wanted to leave our listeners with?
Wear a mask and try to keep your distance. Try not to have big gatherings. Try to play it safe. And vaccinate.
Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Navator666, and Jeffrey Geist Navator on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Well, I definitely enjoyed having you on here. I am very surprised that I've not gotten you on here yet. I could have swore I have already, but I guess we just talk so damn much because we're related.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Anyways, listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you wish to support the work, feel free to hop on Patreon and donate money, or jump on PayPal, coin payments, donate us cash, cryptocurrency, whatever. And thank you to Jason and Ann Skellerton for your continued support. Love y'all. And we will be switched over to Libsyn hopefully next month with transcripts on all the episodes. So look forward to that. Love you, Jeffrey. Bye.
Love you.